Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
We are very fortunate to have on our Community Conversations podcast today Michael Keelan, a keen horticulturist from a child, in fact. Michael has had a stellar career in media and with horticulture and gardening, and you may know him for Out of the Blue, where it came to light that he loves a good dose of chili, but he tells me that's not quite true. You'll also hear him most weekends on Breakfast with the Gardening Show, writes newspaper columns, is in the social media. In fact, he's just everywhere. Welcome, Michael.
Kerry, thank you very much indeed. Are you sure that's me?
I'm sure that's you, because I did check, because I have hosted Breakfast with you. I thought, is this the bloke? Yeah, it is the bloke.
That's him. Yeah, yes.
Well, I'm interested, first off, Michael, is how as a child did you become so passionate about gardening? Because for myself, I like gardens, but not gardening.
Well, without going back too far into our family, I suppose, history, my grandmother lived with me, my father's mother, and she was a very keen gardener. And in fact, she, during the 1930s, won the Sunday Mail Gardening Awards several times. So we got these certificates that she was a fairly keen gardener. We think she followed the Edna Walling sort of style of gardening with rockeries and grottos, those sort of things. But she was a great influence on my mother. And when, of course, living with her, it was quite often my brother and I were out in the garden.
Raking up leaves, I see. How impressive.
And of course, in those days, they were big gardens. They weren't sort of the half-acre blocks. And there was veggie gardens, there were chook ducks, you know, the whole thing. So we really grew up on a suburban farm in some respects. And gardening was a very, very big part of it, yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that and a lot more, because why I was so keen to get you on, Michael, is because we all know cost of living is impacting everybody. And going back to growing what you eat in this whole garden to plate concept. So let's have a look at the cost of living and food. What have you noticed for yourself, what something was years ago to what it is now?
Well, there's no question that all foods, whether they be grown or bought, have gone up with, you know, even from the garden situation, with cost of seedlings, pots, potting mix, all that's gone through the roof. And you only have to go into a grocery shop, green grocery shop, and see the cost of, you know, just a bunch of radishes and a stick of celery. It's just gone through the roof. And so I guess from a cash point of view, that's had a big drain, apart from all the other expenses that have gone on. Sadly, people cut back on that, where they probably should cut back on maybe that treasure that they love puffing away with, or having that odd red wine that they maybe had one too many. Maybe cut back on those things, but keep buying good food. Because, you know, it's interesting when you buy something, say, for example, a chook, you know, and you get it cooked, and it's probably $10 or $15. But you might get six meals out of that. So you're looking at portioning, and each meal costing only $3. So you really have to look into every type of food that you buy or grow and portion it out. And you'd be surprised how, I might say cheap's not quite the word, but how efficient it is to grow your own if you can, and buy sensibly. Don't buy a big bag of carrots. Well, we used to. And you'd have carrots in the freezer sort of going a bit grey. But now we'll buy, you know, half a dozen carrots every fortnight, or a small bag of potatoes every fortnight, rather than buy a big bag. It's interesting how you can change and you don't realise you are changing. But I think we all are. And we've all sort of, whether you can afford it or whether you have to, we've all cut back.
And seasonal produce is so important, isn't it, Michael? It's the difference between growing what is season and cooking what's in season, but also buying it as well.
Oh, it is too, because generally if you buy in-season fruit and veggies, they last longer. That's the first thing. They generally taste better. For example, tomatoes. You buy tomatoes during the, you know, it's a fairly extensive growing season here in South Australia, say from November through to, you know, even May, June with some varieties. And, you know, taste those compared to what you buy in the supermarket or your fruit and veg. And they're like chalk and cheese. So there's a five-month window that you can grow a very, very popular, well, it's a fruit actually, to eat, you know, sort of most meals.
My partner, who's Italian, as you know, he, yes, of course, his father had a big garden and had the tomatoes, and he always tells the story of, oh, other kids got toys, I got a shovel for my birthday to go out and dig the tomatoes and water them. So
it's true, though, just staying with Italians. We grew up in the Paynham area. That was Italian, probably the area that they could afford to get into when they first immigrated, you know, in the 50s, I suppose, mainly, 50s and 60s. Paynham, St. Maurice, I mean, they're all...
Campbelltown,
Paradise. Mainly, Paradise was more celery growers and established European market gardeners, as they were called in those days. But that soon finished when, you know, say they were sitting on 5 acres of land, they sold it for $500,000, and those days it was sort of huge money because all that suburbia now out there. And but the Italians really, I think, showed us to a great degree what we can really grow here in South Australia in the way of fruit and veg. I mean, no eggplant. No one ever knew or heard of an eggplant. Capsicums. Well, hardly anyone grew those.
Back a bunch in the... of capsicums in season. If you roast them, they're stunning. Fantastic.
Yes. Well, any food that's in season, you know, where you live, in the state you live in, or the climate you live in, rather, it's good. Tastes terrific, lasts longer, and cheaper.
And, Michael, what's easier to grow? Because for us who aren't the green thumb that you are, what's fail-safe? What can I go and throw in that garden and it will grow?
Now, Kerry, I've got a few sort of secrets about... I've had some incredible failures. And I say to people when I give little talks about gardening, don't worry about that. You learn from that. You really, really do. I think the most experienced gardener, if they are honest with themselves and they have a failure, will say, I shouldn't have watered that at midday in summer. Maybe I shouldn't have planted it there. It's really not quite the right spot. So we all make mistakes, and gardening's forgiving. It really is, if you're sensible about it from day one. Have a few mistakes, but you'll have more successes as a result of those mistakes down the track. And so it's worthwhile having a couple along the way, I think.
Are there some types of food that is easy to grow and then eat than others? Like, I can remember zucchinis always just growing to these huge, easy to grow, and just they were enormous.
Yeah, you're right. And the other thing, before you actually grow anything, you should really think about what you eat most, what you like. It's no good planting zucchinis if, I mean, like me, I don't like them. I mean, I'll eat them.
But people use them as pasta now, not all the carbs. They now do the zucchini noodles.
Exactly. So I'm beginning to like them.
I remember not to make that for you, Michael.
And also the seasons. And the spring, summer, autumn season is the one, I suppose, what would it be, sort of almost 9 months, where you can grow something to eat very easily here in South Australia, particularly on the plains and out of frost areas. You know, as I said earlier, tomatoes running right into May, June in some cases. And I bet someone listening to us today will say, I've got tomatoes, I've still got them growing, because tomatoes are a perennial, which means they'll go from one season to another if they're growing in the right spot. Now, if you've got a nice north-facing aspect, and you've got your tomatoes there, chances are you'll get them growing for at least 6, 7, 8 months of the year.
And then I suppose we need to look at volumes, because if you look at tomatoes, you want to put them into a tomato sauce for a spaghetti bolognese.
You need a lot of tomatoes.
So you have to go to all your neighbours and say, look, that patch of dirt, can I plant some tomatoes?
Well, you know, I mean, years ago you'd do that. But these days it's not quite as easy, because, I mean, problem is, if you grow fruit trees and the branch hangs over the fence... I grew up a pumpkin in the front of our yard, and it grew up on a big, it was about a 6-foot-high brush fence. And I thought, well, that's the last I'll see of that. But over on the roadside, there were 3 pumpkins lined up.
I thought you were going to say that because people took them. I had people.
Well, they did. They had not grown on my side of the fence. In fact, they'd grown on the roadside, the footpath side of the fence. And there they were for 2 or 3 months ripening. I thought, isn't that lovely? No one's taking them. People drive past, they see them. And I went out there one morning, gone.
Gone. I had someone eyeing off my lemons. I was coming back to my house. I live across from the supermarket, and there's people all look out that you can look, but you're not having them.
No, true. Years and years ago, when I was about 10 or 11, we used to swim down the torrents at Paynham. You know, it's incredible when you think about it. We used to go fishing in the torrents down there. But anyway, we were swimming down there, and we were walking home through all the back streets, and Mr. Trimboli had a, probably what we'd say now would be a 2-hectare block of land, so it was pretty big, and he had his rows of this and rows of that, but he had fruit trees along the fence line, because we just walked past and pinched something.
Oh, everyone does.
And he chased us. And anyway, knew who I was, so get a knock on the door for my father, goes to the door, there's Mr. Trimboli, saying your son has stolen some of the fruit.
Hey, had you pegged.
He did. All these years later, I'd never forgotten it. And it's one of those things that if I'd known the law, as I do know now, hanging over the fence, they're
fair
yours.
Game.
They're fair game.
Well, I really wouldn't have minded sharing my lemons, and I do normally, but they have off seasons when I've got hardly a lemon this year, so I'm very precious.
Yeah, the Lisbon lemon is an amazing lemon. You can, in some instances, get lemons almost 12 months of the year, where the others are, you know, spasmodic. I think it's essential to have it. If you've got the space and you don't have to have ground space, as long as you've got sun space, you can grow a lemon. You can grow it in a pot. You can espalier a lemon, grow it along a fence line. And they are the best value food-producing plant you could get.
Because you can use really them for fish fantastic. And chicken and yeah. vegetable dishes. So that brings me to herbs, Michael, because that's something. Now, you go to Coles. Get you a bunch of herbs and it looks fine. I don't know what they spray it with. The second you walk out the door, it's flopped over and that's
yes,
that.
Yes, they need resuscitating, don't they?
They need resuscitating.
Well, growing herbs, I think that's the entry into growing anything, any food rather. So herbs, you've got mint, parsley, sage, rosemary, thyme, basil, the list goes on. And they're all easy to grow. I mean, our climate, our Mediterranean climate, there would be a mere handful of plants that we cannot grow in the food department. And less in the ornamental department because we've got this incredible climate. Our soils are poor, but we can fix those up with organics and nutrition, so that's not an issue. If you haven't got dirt space, i.e. a garden, you can grow them in big tubs. And as I said earlier, you can grow them on espalier or grow them on hanging gardens or even now they've got those sort of almost pergola-like frameworks that you can buy and grow up a kiwi fruit or something like that. Mm. You know, there's really, if you want to grow something you really love, apart from some of the more exotic herbs and spices, you could do it in South Australia, somewhere. You could.
I'm talking to Michael Keelan, host of Weekend Breakfast Gardening on 5AA, has been on Out of the Blue, writes newspaper columns. If you haven't heard of this man, well, you can't be living is all I can say. He is the gardening guru extraordinaire. And the reason I wanted you particularly on the show, Michael, is because so many of our community centres are being hammered with people looking for food. And what we always try to do is teach people to fish.
Mm.
A lot of the community centres have community gardens and they're lovely, but what I'm looking at now is space is premium.
Yes.
What is the best things to grow? And you're just saying with herbs, part of the issue is if I've only got a small area or I have an apartment, but perhaps we could have more cooperative gardening like we do with community gardenings. But the other day you were talking about verge garden.
Yeah, that's an interesting area of gardening that's just sort of being recognised as something very serious that can help the community in, you know, times like we're going through at the moment. The thing is, it's a real trust thing. So you've got a verge that is technically owned by the council or the state, generally the council. They have got no, I suppose, responsibility to maintain them. All it is the road, the verge, the footpath, and your property. And so most councils will, if some sort of a reasonable plan is put forward to them, will allow you to cultivate a verge. Now, it can be a lawn, can be a Australian native garden, it can be a mixture of succulent, but it also can be a veggie garden.
See, now, most people would not know this.
No, and the thing about it is, though, therein lies the problem where you really have to have trust and honesty because if, for example, Kerry, you were going to grow your verge with vegetables, and just say you had some cocktail tomatoes growing, you could have capsicums growing, some herbs there, basil, big patches of basil. But if you have that growing, and you don't mind the odd person coming along and having a sample, but things like vandalism come into play and people that just abuse the system would be a concern to stop people from going down that track. Now, if we can work out how you can avoid all that and encourage people with this, I suppose it's an honour system, then I think verges are this land just waiting to be used.
Well, look how much is just sitting there. Well, you're making me think, Michael, we have Neighbourhood Watch. We'll have Verge Watch there watching because it does make sense. And look, people are really struggling and it doesn't cost a lot to get some seedlings and cooperatively it makes a difference because then you say, you grow this, you grow that in front of your verge.
Exactly right.
And with a whole street, you could have dinner.
Yeah.
Couldn't you? Go along and I've made dinner.
You may have heard of Joe's Connected Gardens out at Elizabeth. Now, I think there are five or six homes with interconnecting gates, their backyards. And they do that. They grow things for each other and they swap. And look, how many times would you say, take a basket of lemons to someone in the season and they might have some tomatoes they can give you. And it's a very Italian thing, isn't it?
It
very
is. Greek. Oh, but the Italians will say, if you can't eat it, you don't grow it, you're wasting space.
Yeah, exactly right. So it gets back to when you're saying, what can you grow? It's really what I should grow that I'm going to use, that I'm not going to waste, that I'm not going to get too many. Stagger your plantings. I mean, when you go into a garden centre, you buy a punnet of four or five, six tomatoes. So you've got six tomatoes in. Six tomatoes can probably produce 30 kilos of tomatoes. What are you going to do with all that? What really you should do is stagger. So buy a single plant, plant it in, say, October. End of October, plant another one, maybe a different cultivar, different variety. And so you've got this procession of continuity of supply of tomatoes. And you can do that with most crops. Potatoes are a bit different because they take, you know, sort of 16 weeks to ripen, so to speak, mature. So you've got to pick the crops that are going to come in. You can grow easily, you've got the right aspect, and you can use them.
And Michael, can you have pot gardens where people literally don't have ground to put it in? Could you do it with pots?
We've got a big pot garden. In fact, we moved two or three times in our life, and we got to know the removalist. He may be listening. He pretty well. He's a lovely guy. And he'd rock up with his truck and so what have you got? Look through the house and see all the, you know, beds and all that sort of stuff. Then he'd go out to our outside and there would be all these pots. So it was a bit of a joke to start
with. Pots are hard to move. Pots. They're heavy. Pots. No one likes to move a pot.
Shockers. They really are. But anyway, the third time he said, don't ever move. If you do, don't ring
call me.
But you're right. There is nothing wrong at all. In fact, it's very sensible to grow anything, whether it be an ornamental tree, whether it be a fruiting tree, herbs, in pots, in containers. Don't go for high decorative containers if you don't want. You can go for big sort of straight-sided terracotta pots, which are fabulous. You could go for, they've got some really big heavy-duty plastic pots. There's no excuse really for not growing something in a pot. Even if you've got not one square centimetre of soil, you can grow something in a
you've
pot.
You've got room, you can put a pot.
Hanging baskets, that's another.
Oh, true. Yeah. Now, Michael, that brings me to something else then, because one of the things that is a big cost with gardening is water. Mm. Is it more effective to water with pots or even when it's in the ground? How do you water effectively and efficiently?
Well, we still have all those pots that I was talking about and more. In fact, we've got a stairway going down to the garden, and it's got six steps. So on each step, we've got two pots, and that's our herb garden. It faces north. It's perfect. So they're on a dripper that's connected to an automatic timer.
That's a good idea.
So it's totally removed from the normal, say, lawn system or bigger pots. And so that comes on every day for about 3 minutes. So you're not overwatering. The plants never go in and out of stress. And if you fertilise them with a slow-release fertiliser, say, in October, November, that's enough for them for the whole year. So you've cut down on the usage of water. The plants are getting plenty. They don't need any more. And if you were to hand water those, you'd overwater them or you'd forget to water them. Then the plants died and you go and buy new plants.
So you that sounds like something
so
I'll
do. So if you can set it up from day one, even with a tap timer, so you go out every morning, just turn it on for 3 minutes, it drips 10 or 20 pots, and you can get drippers these days that you can finely tune them to deliver the correct amount of water. And that's a judgment thing after a while. You'll get used to it. As the temperatures rise, of course, you adjust the dripper, and when it comes over the other side, as it becomes cool, you sort of back off on them. So it's a good way to grow. I think it's a fabulous way for young people to learn how to garden. You know, forget the fork and the hoe and all that. Just buy your kids some pots and get plants that are easy to grow, like chilies, and you don't have to eat them, but you can grow them. Parsley and sage. Sage is fabulous to grow. It's easy. And basil, when that's in season, is great to grow as well.
And I think too, Michael, the taking it from the garden to the plate, especially for youth who don't necessarily cook these days, and everyone should be, rather than buying, the obsession with Uber Eats, I don't understand it.
Someone that's gone berserk,
cycles,
isn't it?
The food's cold by the time you get it. Goodness knows what happened to it before you got it. Mm. But young people love Uber Eats, whereas you can never beat that freshness of garden to plate, cooked it, here you are.
Yeah. It's interesting with Uber Eats, just before I get back to that, we've found that the restaurants we used to go to regularly that have had the Uber clause hooked into them don't give you the service that you used to get because they're too busy building out Uber meals. they forget the person that's been coming for years.
That's sitting in their restaurant.
Sitting in there waiting. The meal's always late in most cases. It's sort of, you're not a second-rate customer, but there's probably more cash in the Uber.
It's a quick turnaround.
But anyway, that's by the by. But I think we reach for the ease of getting a meal by getting on the end of a phone and saying, send around four spaghetti bolognese or whatever, when you can buy half a kilogram mince.
Pasta's cheap. Yeah. Mince is cheap now still.
And you make up a big bowl of, say, bolognese sauce or something like that. You probably get 10 meals out of it.
And your herbs make a difference in your spaghetti bolognese.
Herbs make a big difference. And it's a psychological thing. Oh, I need some basil. Oh, excuse me, I'll just go out and get some. A little bit of parsley. You pluck it from your pot growing the herbs. You're right, it's a wonderful feeling to be able to do that. And I think the end result, you can taste the difference.
And, Mark, you're also taking back control of the economic situation. We can't impact on what the supermarkets are charging, but we can stop buying things from
them. Yeah, you're right. Walked into one of the bigger ones the other day and walked past the radishes. Now, radishes, you think, they're bulletproof. Well, they pretty well are. The tops of the radish, lovely foliage, which you can eat, but it was just flopped over. And you think, you should not be allowed to sell that because it's a second-rate product. Really, I mean, you can still eat them. But to present food like that, if you go to Italy, and you probably have, and a lot of other places, the way they present their fruit and veg, I mean, Tony and Mark's do it well because they sort of got that Italian background.
Same profile.
You go in there, I buy stuff I don't want. I go, no, I don't want it. You'll buy a bunch of leeks because they look good and you've got leeks for the next 3 months.
Exactly. Presentation does make a big difference.
It does.
And I think that's
does.
That same about when you do grow it at home, it always looks fresh and you're looking after it, whereas fabulous. It doesn't always in our supermarkets.
Yeah. There's one crop that I mentioned earlier that takes a long time to grow. Boy, if you grow potatoes and you've got a spare patch of ground or a big deep pot, and some potatoes you have to actually heal up, and as you heal up, they grow more potatoes. Some you don't. So get the variety that you just plant and they multiply under the ground. And in 100 to 140 days, there is nothing better, Kerry, than to go down there and pull up five or six potatoes from one small eye that you planted. It's fantastic.
And that's amazing to let them have that eye grow and then you can then go out and plant.
It is superb, yeah.
Gardening is very self-sustaining. That's what I love about it.
Yeah, and the same with garlic. We can all grow garlic here. We buy garlic from Mexico, China, USA, and you could grow, say, 12 garlic sections, and you would get 12 beautiful big cloves of garlic that will probably last you 3 or 4 months of the year. So, you know, you can do it. It's not hard. It's not magical. It's no science to it. It's just common sense.
So why do we think people aren't growing more for themselves?
I don't think a lot of the younger generation really understand gardening. And it's this, oh, it's for old people or it's some mysterious thing. You have to be a guru. I'd like $1 million for it every time someone said, I'm a guru. You know, it's not the case. Anyone can garden. I mean, my grandmother, I remember her gardening in her 95th year on a pair of crutches. I'll tell this story. She was a big lady.
A very stoic in the Keelan family.
A buxom Irish lady. And she had a crutch with a dibber, or dibbler, some people call them. It's sort of a pointy thing you would push in the ground and put a seedling in. Well, she had that on. It was her dibbler crutch. So she would go gardening. She'd get the crutch, push it into the ground, get the seedling. She had that wrapped under the other arm and drop it on the ground. And with the crutch, she'd sort of put it in the ground, tamp it down, and that was it. She gardened like that in her 90s.
There is a story. that is absolutely unbelievable. Well, Michael, you've shared some fantastic information. Our community centres do have community gardens, and we're trying to engage youth, so this could be a great way to do that, even if it is cost of living that's driving people there. But it's also good for your soul.
It's fabulous.
Being outside in nature.
Yeah, look, there's so much evidence to suggest that gardening is good for your soul, it's good for your health. It's just one of those very natural things that is so easy to connect with, and it doesn't mean hands-on. Just walking through the botanic garden is good for your soul, or to have if you're ill in hospital, to look out. I remember a friend of mine was in hospital for 3 months, and he had this view out of the new RIH, looking over Adelaide Oval, and he was jumping out of the bed. He was so thrilled every day. Wake up and there's the
fantastic
oval. All the gardens, all the plants and trees and palms that surround the oval. He could see it. That really brightened his day up. And this is the same for all of us. When to go for a walk and walk around your street and look at the gardens, look at the verges, you'll be surprised how many there are. you know, stroll through the park, take the dog for a walk in the park. Victoria Park Racecourse now is just an amazing area to walk in. You've got water, you've got new plantings of Australian native plants, you've got water plants, you've got big old 200 or 300 year old gum trees. It's just, you know, you feel connected. And I think that's what's missing a lot. And really, governments don't, all governments, they don't take gardening, how good it is for you, seriously enough. But anyway, one day they'll wake up.
Well, community centres certainly do, Michael, and what you've shared today is some really practical tips, some inspirational stories. Now, Michael, I can't let you go without telling listeners how far back your gardening heritage really goes.
Yeah, it's interesting, really. I mentioned about my grandmother, Elsie May Keelan, she was, or Elsie May Coleman, one of 11 daughters to John Coleman, and they were born, the daughters, in where Happy Valley Reservoir is now. Where the reservoir is was obviously a indentation in the ground, a little village, and they were born there. And then they had to move out because of the reservoir. But John Coleman, his grandfather, was Queen Victoria's head gardener at Windsor Castle. Now, they had head gardeners for different sections. That goes back to her time, and my grandmother had a, I suppose you'd call it, a reference from the Queen, saying how John, the gardener, did a terrific job. blah, blah, blah. She was just one of the 11 daughters that really took on gardening.
Well, if you were ever going to cement your pedigree, Michael, I think that's just nailed it. So thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. And it's great to work with you, Kerry. We have a bit of fun on the old station.
We do. So good to see you here at Coast FM. And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au and feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.